Hello and welcome to the Listening at Warwick podcast, examining blended learning throughout the coronavirus pandemic. I am Charlie, a third year biological science student.
I'm Georgia, a postgraduate film studies student.
And I am Grace, a second year politics, philosophy and law student. And we're really excited to have you here. Hope you enjoy.
This question is going to seem a bit targeted at you, Harry, but you mentioned when you kind of filled out the form that you're sort of interested in talking about how international students have experienced sort of the blended learning.
So there's a couple of things I'd like to address there. First of all, a lot of international students, my friends, have been stuck home because of flights and other restrictions. So online learning has obviously enabled them to take part in the process. Now, recognizing that online learning is not perfect and it's no substitute for real face-to-face learning, especially in this time of great need, online learning serves as like an avenue towards connecting people and connecting to knowledge. So over Christmas, I was stranded actually in Hong Kong, where I'm from, because I couldn't get a flight back. I think the UK was just going into another wave of lockdowns. And with that experience, obviously, I just started a module for a second term. And that was my only way of engaging. It really brought the hybrid aspect of learning to the forefront, because again, some people like myself are fortunate enough to be able to make it back onto campus, but others are stuck in their home countries where that's the only real way of them connecting with the university, barring, you know, just reading Moodle and PDFs. As international students, I know my friends and I don't have really big homes. We most definitely, not all of us, have our rooms. We're all, you know, quite a big family. We all are working or studying at home. And sometimes it does lead to a bit of friction whereby, you know, there are disturbances, there are like noises, interruptions, etc. And yeah, it does take a while to get used to. And that's where being flexible comes in. Obviously, with the time zones, you can't adjust to when the seminar is going to happen. But what some of my friends have done is for group work projects, we try to use Google Calendar or another time zone planner to try and work out the time zones to see if there's a neutral time where everyone is, you know, good and accessible. But also, it's about the on-demand nature of learning, because sometimes, as I mentioned before, there are disturbances at home, especially with a large family and you don't have your own room. So the on-demand nature of learning allows us to access learning when it's best for us and produce the best quality work that we can, given the circumstances.
Yeah, I think it would be remiss of me to not sort of acknowledge that this is obviously a really big issue for international students, but I think universally there's kind of this issue of accessibility and sort of disruption in the home. I think for a lot of people who lived at home, there was probably, it probably didn't sort of benefit them a lot having to sort of deal with this environment.
It really does bring to the issue of equality, especially. Now, I know we're quite fortunate to be able to attend Warwick, but internet access is not ubiquitous. Neither is device access. Especially, I know some of my friends, they share one desktop, not even a laptop, PC between the entire family. And that really is difficult, especially with scheduled classes and obviously lectures where you have to be there in one time. Also with the internet access issues, I remember distinctly where when we first started the term here, the whole Wi-Fi didn't really cope because it was set up in a way that anticipated only uses for entertainment. Because normally you would be in the lecture theater and you wouldn't have 100 different streams with like 20 people in each going on. And it's, again, it's all about communicating. I don't know if Joff has a different experience, but when we started noticing these issues, we raised it again. Like I raised it with law school, I raised it with estates and accommodation. And they were really receptive. They, in fact, this year, all like campus-wide, they ripped out all the internet access points and they installed new ones this time, one for every room. So they obviously do listen, and it's about communicating as well.
Yeah, I think I would tend to agree with the points that you make. I generally I haven't experienced issues with connectivity, but then there was one occasion where, you know, you're sort of scheduled to have a meeting and then BT Openreach of doing something down the road, your internet drops out, and then it's out for, I think it was out for about a week. And on a normal occasion, you'd think, you know, oh, well, that's nothing. I can do without the internet for a week. But when it's impacting on you in terms of your access to your education, you're sort of letting people down. And, you know, that I think that then becomes more of an issue. And I think although that isn't about necessarily equality, I think that, you know, when I was teaching in primary schools, and when there was this expectation that families had to be accessing the content that we put online, it wasn't necessarily live content, but we'd sort of post videos and things like that. There was exactly the same situation in the community that Harry describes in the international community, in the sense that there were families that only had one device, and often that was a phone, so it wasn't a laptop, and that they would have to schedule the time through the day in order to access the content that you are providing. And of course, you know, as the barriers mount up and mount up, eventually people just turn around and say, we just can't do that. That's putting too much of a stress on sort of my, you know, if you want to call it well-being, I suppose. And then, you know, that's sort of that barrier is then sort of, you know, really quite disruptive to that child's education. So I think the issues that Harry's described, I think, although prevalent in the international community, perhaps in certain areas, I think that there is, you know, that they go wider than that and they go broader than that. I've long been a believer that, as Harry has sort of said, that learning is constructed between, you know, the teacher, the students, their experiences. There's more factors going on than maybe that could maybe be given credit for in sort of national policy and things like that. And I think the pandemic and the breakdown of the classroom environment, I think that just underlined the fact that particularly as you go down the age groups, that actually that social aspect to learning is just, you can't replace it. You can't replace that in an online environment. And I think that is why we're seeing, you know, so many students now that have sort of fallen behind. You know, it's not just a case of the teacher has the knowledge, here it is, go and learn it, and then that is the extent of what is happening. I think it's a far more complex process than that can capture, I suppose. Well, I think in terms of my learning, I think a lot of the learning that I do is from reading. So, you know, a lot of it at this level is, I suppose, just working your way and finding your way through this landscape of literature and trying to position yourself within it, I think. And although the research modules that we had were on research methods, I mean, and a lot of that content, you know, can be found in the things that you read, you know, if not more than what can be captured in, you know, an hour. In a way, those lectures were more like signposts to reading, I suppose. So in terms of that aspect, it hasn't really massively affected. I suppose I haven't really been to the library. That's been a massive, massive thing. And that's I've got a heart condition. So primarily I haven't been venturing to sort of those places that may be sort of kind of busier. So a lot of my reading has tended to be limited by what can be accessible on e-journals, what can be accessible in terms of e-books. But some of the older books that I sort of want to read, I've either had to buy myself, or, you know, I'm waiting for that time when I can sort of buck up the courage to go to the library. And then I suppose the other big aspect is the fact that when you're planning the research project, you know, which is going to involve going into primary schools, that the policy of the Education Studies Department has been that that hasn't been allowed. I think it was only lifted a couple of weeks ago. So you're constantly thinking, am I going to be able to get into schools to do the research project that I want to do? And simultaneously thinking, what's my backup plan if I start the research and then there's a lockdown, or, you know, what do I do then? You know, because in some ways you're sort of, your whole thesis is riding on that design and riding on that data. And, you know, once you've gone down a route where you're going to be observing or interviewing and things like that, you know, what happens then? There's this massive uncertainty that you can't control, that no one can control, but you just have to sort of put in mitigating measures and hope for the best, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think what this whole pandemic has taught us really is that when so much is riding on availability and riding on the fact that we are able to do what we have to do, online learning and these tools, they might not be the best, but they're the only ways that some of us can actually access these opportunities. And I think what it's also taught us is resilience and how to accept change, because a lot of us, especially me myself, when I get to use a tool, I prefer to stick with it. And obviously back in school, back in sixth form, the tool that I was actually used to using was Zoom or Google Meet. Obviously it's different with Teams, but it's about adapting and surviving, understanding that things do change. They change quite rapidly, and how to manage your own time, because sometimes there is email overload. And with all these tools, sometimes hopping from meeting to meeting, you tend to get rather exhausted. It teaches us resilience, how to care for ourselves, and how to, you know, stay strong, look for opportunities in times where opportunities are not frequently coming by, and where you have to direct where you want to go. Again, like my professors always say, it's up to what you make of university. And as an undergrad who has just started university, finished first year, I can affirm that notion, whereby I learned the biggest takeaway I had from this pandemic and online learning is that it's up to me how much I want to engage. Obviously, there is a risk with some drier modules, again, going back to land law here, where if you're learning about trust and like land transfers, all that, you can switch off. And I've got to admit, I have occasionally disengaged with the content. But it's about, I guess, pulling yourself back in, understanding that, yes, this is what, you know, I'm paying for. This is, I chose to do law, and this is where I want to be. So make the most out of it. And look, no one's having an easy time. We're all struggling in one way or another, even without online learning, even just with the pandemic. I remember like catching COVID, dealing with, you know, online classes, assignments, etc. But resilience is, I guess, my biggest takeaway of this pandemic going forward.
And just as sort of a final question, is there anything that you would like to see, any aspect of online learning that you would like to see continue sort of post-pandemic, post-online learning?
I think one of the things that we should definitely keep is the availability of notes and lecture capture, because obviously I haven't been at Warwick for a long time, but I know that in normal years lecture capture could perhaps not be as comprehensive as it now is. And I know some professors don't really enjoy, you know, recording the lectures. They feel that student engagement is higher in person, which I agree. It is easier and better to engage in person. However, if things were to be recorded, if notes were still to be compiled by professors and shared, that is something I would like to see going forward. And I guess finally, it's the adaptability, because I know, especially for my department, they were very open to suggestions, and there was a dialogue going. We had a Padlet where we could directly reach out to the head director of undergraduate studies. She would be able to respond to us directly, kind of like direct messaging each other. And when there was concerns, such as during exam season, there was a heightened period of concern with regards to exam format, I really like to see that open dialogue going, even in real life.
I think the idea of lecture capturing, I think it's easy to, I suppose, only view it from the student perspective. And I think actually, you know, when having had conversations with lecturers that are having to do this, you know, my brother's a lecturer and my supervisor, we've had conversations about it. And the workload that has created for that group of people is undeniable. So I think whilst I agree that having that knowledge accessible is a good thing, I think it would have to be carefully done in the sense that you wouldn't want that person having to do that lecture twice, I suppose. So they'd have to work out a way of sort of capturing it sort of in the room when it's being done. But in principle, I think that is a good idea. I think in terms of, I think the idea of accessibility to things like conferences, to things like lectures remotely, I think all of that should be kept as standard, I would argue. You know, I think, you know, for students that, you know, aren't able to get there on that day, I think having that option to do that, I think would be incredibly beneficial, particularly when you think about students that might have care needs, or you know I've had a situation where family members have been you know, quite ill and things like that. I think those are all valuable things that need to be held on to, I think, so that, you know, because I think it's all about access, isn't it? It's all about breaking down barriers, providing access, and making sure that knowledge is shared with everybody in sort of an equal way, I think.
To be honest, I've been cooped up in a dorm room, a university hall of residence for a year and a little bit more than that. I would love the opportunity to just engage face-to-face with, you know, my peers, my lecturers. I want to get to know them and build that working relationship, which is, I guess, sometimes hard online.
I think for me personally, I'm in sort of no rush to get back to that the whole face-to-face thing. And I think that's partly because I don't really have that many, I wouldn't have that many face-to-face encounters anyway. It would literally just be a meeting with my supervisor once a month. So I think, you know, as long as we were both happy with the arrangement of meeting online, I don't really see a massive issue and massive rush to, you know, get back to that, I suppose.
Thank you guys so much for coming. That was a really interesting sort of dialogue about the experience of online learning. And I think we're all ready for a bit of a change. So it was great to have you both.
No, thank you. Thank you for hosting. You've been a good host. Good questions.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Listening Award podcast. We have more episodes discussing other aspects of blended and online learning this year. But until then, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.